Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. I am so excited to have this guest on the show for multiple reasons. One is that he is a fan favorite in this profession. We absolutely love him. He's a great friend of mine, but we have never talked about fish anesthesia or fish medicine for that matter. And so joining us is Dr. Gianluca Bini. How are you, my friend?
Great. How are you?
I'm so happy now that I have you here because it's this is going to be a really cool conversation that I want to know. And I know our listeners have been asking about this. So I couldn't think of anyone more competent in this area than you because of your expertise. So you're welcome. And because I know you love fish, by the way, right?
Yes. I have pet fishes at home. And every time that there is some research project involving fishes, I try to jump on it. I really love them. They're a little bit, let's say, not misunderstood, but like, you know, they don't really have the same level of like attention that, you know, most of our like species have. Some people don't even know that, you know, you can do fish medicine, but it's a growing field. It's a growing field. So that's, it's good that, you know, the audience gets some information on this.
Yeah, it really is. And so to the listeners, a little bit about Dr. Gianluca Bini. He graduated from the University of Perugia in Italy. He then moved to the United Kingdom, where he completed two internships, one in anesthesia and one rotating at Dick White Referrals, one of the largest referral centers in Europe. After completing the residency, he was at North Carolina State University, and he's currently an assistant professor of anesthesiology and pain management at the Ohio State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. So you've been all over the place there. I love it.
Yeah. A lot of different countries, a lot of different ways of doing things. That's definitely make you a more well-rounded clinician for sure. I'm really grateful to have had the chance of doing that. So yeah, that's...
Yeah, and you get to see like all the cultures and what, you know, how everyone treats their animals a little. The human-animal bond is different in different areas around the world.
Definitely, 100%, 100%. And even medicine, you know, it's a little bit different, you know, based on not only like different drugs are available in different countries, but also like, you know, the level of like, you know, equipment that it's different. And sometimes, you know, in anesthesia, we always try to, if we don't have something, we always try to jerry-rig it somehow make it work. You know, your adaptation skills are, you know, need to be quite, quite prominent.
Well, I've always said veterinarians, we're like the MacGyvers of medicine, you know?
100%.
Figure things out. Well, speaking of, so, I mean, anesthetizing a fish, like, so where do you begin? Do you need any special equipment for that?
So you can have some special equipment if you want. You don't really need it. So you can literally use a bucket, and that's, you know, a lot of places for quick procedures, that's what they do. You know, you can anesthetize a fish either by immersion or by administering the drugs, in bigger fishes, IV or IM, like you would do for, you know, your dogs, cats. But if you're doing it by immersion, you can literally even just use a bucket and, you can go as fancy as for like a fish anesthesia device, which is literally like a little tank where there is water underneath. There is a little pump that, you know, pumps the, it has a little tube that pumps the water and it's recirculating that water. And then there is a sort of like a grate where we place a towel and which is wet. The fish lays on the towel and the tube coming from the pump goes in the fish mouth so that the water constantly recirculate from the tank to the fish mouth. And then it comes out of their gills. And so it passes through their gills so that, you know, they have an uptake of the oxygenated water and the water with the anesthetic. And so that guarantees you that the fish constantly have a a supply of oxygenated water and anesthetic. And that's usually done for more prolonged procedures because, you know, sometimes it's really, there is more than 33,000 different species of fishes. And unfortunately, the anesthesia dosages are very, very different from one to another. And sometimes it's hard to get the dose right. And you may make them too deep. And then what happens is that they stop, quote unquote, breeding, which is called operculating in fishes. And so if they stop operculating, then they stop, you know, uptaking oxygenated water and they stop uptaking anesthetics. And so then that becomes a problem when you're trying to have a longer procedure like surgery or, you know, diagnostic imaging. We did CTs in koi fishes. We did surgery on them. So like it's, you know, that's a little bit more a complex situation and that's where you need a little bit more. But if you're just doing an exam or if you're just doing an injection or something simple and quick, a normal bucket would do.
Okay. And so what drugs do you use?
Well, you could use, the most common use drug is called MS-222, which is basically a sodium channel blocker, a little bit more like lidocaine or benzocaine or different local anesthetics. And so that's the most common one, but you can also use ketamine, you can use methotrexate, you can use butorphanol, you can use propofol for that matter. Now, fishes with propofol, they tend to avoid it because of, you know, the different composition, like with the lipids and all that. You can use alfaxalone for that matter. The most important thing when you're performing anesthesia by immersion is actually making sure that the pH of the solution is balanced. So for example, the MS-222, as it comes in the, when you, it comes in a powder, you reconstitute it. And unfortunately that it's very, very acidic. And so it needs to be balanced pH wise. And so, you know, if you're not doing that, you have a pretty huge pH swing and you may actually end up, you know, killing the fish rather than anesthetizing it. So you definitely don't want to do that. So you need to make sure that the pH of the solution is balanced. Usually, another question I usually get is, do you need to take care of like the water parameters? And yes, you do. You can't place a fish that is used to that water in their tank in a completely different water, you know, in a water with totally different parameters. That's definitely a good way to kill them or stress them out really bad. And usually that's how the most common cause of that for fishes is actually stress, especially in, you know, pet fishes. You need to either use the same water that you're using in their tank, and that would be ideal. Sometimes when people bring it in into the clinic, obviously they don't have enough water with them. So it's important that you either have that conversation before and be like, yeah, I need, you know, a little bit of extra water with you, or try to get it as close as possible to what their, you know, pH, temperature, salinity, if you're doing saltwater fishes, parameters are.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that too, with the differences between salt and freshwater, because I'm sure the pH is different and the drugs that you use, is it different just because of the type of water they're in?
Yes, a little bit. Yes, definitely. So the dosages of, so fun fact, the dose of anesthetics for saltwater fishes in general is usually half or a little even less than what freshwater fish would get. Their pH is obviously higher because salt water usually it's about 8.3 pH versus freshwater sits anywhere between 6 and 7, depending on which area of the world they come from. Like, you know, if you get a fish from the Amazon River, usually that's pretty acidic. Some of the fishes in there sits around like 5.5 pH. You know, when you put your hands in those tanks that house those fishes, it actually kind of hurts. If you have some little sores, you know, it kind of burns you. Versus, you know, soap water is 8.3, so it's much higher. And that definitely affects your anesthetics for sure. You need less of them. The pH balancing, it's definitely very important for that. You know, some people at the beginning were not balancing their MS-222 when used in salt water, relying on the higher pH of the water and hoping that that would kind of make up for it. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So you still need to make sure that you're not putting a huge amount of acid in the salt water.
Yeah. So when they're waking up from anesthesia, how do they recover from it?
So usually what we do to recover them is put them in an extra bucket that we normally have of water that doesn't contain any anesthetic. And so what you'd see is that they start operculating faster and faster, and they start righting themselves. Usually when they're anesthetized, they become floppy and not really, they don't really move around. And so they start righting themselves up, they start operculating more. And that's usually how they recover from it. It may be useful if the fish is not operculating right from the get-go and you're using a fish anesthesia device. Sometimes people would have a second fish anesthesia device with the fresh water, and so that you make sure that that water actually goes through their gills. You're forcing the water with the pump through their mouth and their gills. So that's another way of doing it. But, you know, commercially available, there isn't really a lot of commercially available fish anesthesia device. So usually it's something that we jerry rig. We got some pictures from Google, and I'm sure that somebody from the audience is going to go and take a look, and they're totally jerry rigged. You know, it's a bucket from Target, and you know, from somewhere, and we just, you know, make it up.
Right. And so what about monitoring them as well?
Yeah. So for monitoring, you have a couple of different ways. You definitely can monitor their quote unquote respiration or operculation rate by just looking at them. And usually the slower the operculation rate, the deeper they are. You can use Doppler if the fish is big enough. So usually you put it right behind, right caudal to their gills. That usually works pretty well. You need a you know, to be careful, because sometimes if you're using a fish anesthesia device, you know, the water will be flushing through. So sometimes you're actually hearing the water that flush through past their gills. And then you think that's their, you know, their pulses, and sometimes it's not. Some people, if their fishes are big enough, you can put ECG on them. You can collect a blood gas from, you know, a blood sample. So there is different things that you can monitor. It all depends on like how big the fish is. So obviously it's different if you're doing a koi fish that's, you know, about at least like 200 or 300 grams versus a clownfish that's, you know, 5 grams. You know, those are tiny, and it makes it much harder to monitor all of that. But definitely you can look at the operculation rate, and that gives you an idea of, you know, how deep they are and what plane of anesthesia they're at.
And give me an idea then, what are some reasons that fish do go under anesthesia? What are some reasons for them to have procedures done?
Yeah, so there are some fishes that go under for a diagnostic imaging. So we have sometimes pretty expensive fishes, like some koi fishes go upwards of, you know, $30,000 or $50,000 each. There are some arowanas fishes that go for like that much as well. So they can go under for CTs, ultrasounds. They can get surgery. In aquaculture, they do it for, you know, sometimes checking the health status of the herd. They also try to, they've been trying different techniques for sturgeons and caviar extraction. So some places started, you know, looking into anesthetizing them and, you know, trying to perform surgery and extract caviar that way rather than, you know, the whole way of, you know, sometimes the fish wouldn't make it afterwards. So that's a little bit more humane. So there's different reasons to do that, both in the commercial side and, you know, in the clinic pet fish side of things.
Yeah. One of our colleagues, I know him, he does a lot of the work for in Las Vegas for all the aquariums that are there too. So like Mandalay Bay, for instance, takes care of all of them. So yeah, it's a really big deal, like you're talking about. And I'll tell you this too, is a lot of the vet students are very interested in aquatic medicine. So
they are. It's a field that's growing real fast. The last AVMA conventions, they had talks about fish medicine. There is growing interest in, you know, student chapters, you know, for aquatic medicine. Definitely, you know, both on the commercial side and on the pet side, we see more and more students going into it. And some of them do it, you know, as a side, but most of them do it actually as their, you know, first job. You know, a huge production of eels are located in Maine. There is huge production of sturgeons and, you know, tilapias, and, you know, all these animals need to get, you know, health checks. Zoos and aquariums need to have their health checks. And, you know, sometimes you can do it with the fish awake. Sometimes you need them anesthetized. You know, if you need to perform a gill scraping for checking for parasites and all of that, obviously you need them anesthetized. And so every time that an animal moves from an institution to another, so from a, you know, from an aquarium to aquarium, or from a zoo to another zoo, or, you know, from a natural science museum to a zoo or something like that, they usually have to have an health check before they're shipped over. And so all of those, most of those are actually performed under anesthesia. So, you know, there's many reasons. It happens behind the scenes. A lot of people don't do it, but
No, it's fantastic. So I have to ask you then, what do you have a favorite species of fish that you love, not just from working on, but that you just like really love?
I don't know. Maybe I'm biased. I have a saltwater tank. So clownfishes for sure are gorgeous.
They are.
You know, if you ever happen to look it up, mandarin gobies are gorgeous. A mandarin goby.
Okay, I'm going to look it up right now, actually, for our listeners. So that way.
Probably one of the most gorgeous fish you'll ever see.
Oh, my gosh. They have like super the blues, colorful. The oranges. They look like highlighters.
Yes, it's insane. And I have one of those, and I can tell you that when she goes to sleep, she changes color. She goes basically almost white to match the color of the sand.
Oh my gosh.
And during the day, super colorful. I don't know how she does that, but that's insane.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Gorgeous.
And their lifespan is about 10 to 15 years. So they have a good lifespan.
Fishes live long. You know, there are some fishes that, you know, don't live that long. For example, like betta fishes that you see around, those are usually like, they live a couple of years. 3 to 5 max, but like, you know, the average is 2. But that's because of like their situation is a little bit special. You know, they originally they grow in, you know, paddles of water in the wild. You know, they live in paddles of water. They don't live in like a large water body. And so those, they dry up and they fill up with the monsoon season, but their lifespan is not that long. But other fishes are, they live a very long time.
Yeah, so fantastic. And then my last question for you, because you're to the listeners, he is a boarded veterinary anesthesiologist at The Ohio State University. So he puts anything and anything under the sun, except humans, I'm assuming.
Yes.
No humans. But although you never know, you probably get a whiff of something. You might be like, oh boy. But yeah. What's one of your favorites? So I know you're about to go into surgery right now on equine. Do you, you know, certain species that you're more attracted to for anesthesiology purposes?
Yeah, I really love all the exotics. You know, I love all animals, obviously.
Of course, right.
But, you know, every time with exotics is always a different challenge. And that's the thing that that's the most fascinating thing. During my residency, I got a call, you know, it was about midnight for a cholecystectomy in a ring-tailed lemur. And, you know, you get this call for like the most random things. I had overnights or on the weekends, I always had the weirdest emergencies. I had a kangaroo MRI. You get all sorts of weird stuff.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's super cool.
That is so cool. Well, Dr. Gianluca Bini, thank you so much for being on and for everything that you do. To our listeners, by the way, too, Dr. Luca is going to be on our speaking circuit at our Fetch conferences in 2023. So you have to make sure that you attend his sessions. He's a wonderful human being and a great friend and resource for you out there, too. So, Dr. Luca, you're fantastic.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
My pleasure. Dr. Gianluca Bini, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you to our listeners as well. Please don't forget to rate this podcast. It always helps us out as well. We'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.